Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulaski, and everything sucks. What sucks is I forgot to put lemonade on the grocery order. So now I'm stuck drinking water like a chump. How will I ever get sour enough? How, without the sour power granted to me by the official beverage of Sour Graps, lemonade. How will I ever get sour enough to yell about shitty WWE booking? I don't know. I think I'll find a way. I always do. It's like those old movies for kids where like, it's like Dumbo. It's like Dumbo and the magic feather. See, Dumbo never needed the magic feather to fly. He has to have that explained to him. The magic feather was like a placebo effect. He thought he needed the magic feather in order to fly, but he didn't. And finally, Timothy the Mouse, who's obviously a stand-in for a Jiminy Cricket character. I don't know if you know this. Dumbo came out hot off the heels of Pinocchio. They were back-to-back, I believe, in the Disney compendium. And so they were like, hey, everybody loves Jiminy Cricket. Should we bring him back for the flying elephant movie? Nah, make him a mouse. Great, perfect. Anyway, so Timothy J. Mouse says, well, you never needed the feather. You never needed it. It's all you, Dumbo. And I, like the other elephant, I don't need the lemonade. It's a security blanket. Also, I love the sour taste. Ew, water, life-sustaining water. Boo. Let's talk about Raw. What is wrong with my mind, you guys? What is wrong with it? What is wrong with Raw? Well, here's what's wrong with Raw. There's been something that I have noticed, particularly on SmackDown, and I wonder if it's like a SmackDown-only thing. Since Heyman is over there now, I wonder if it's a Heyman directive. I've been noticing that people who are not wrestling don't wear wrestling gear. Like, if they're not scheduled to have a match, like, sometimes, like obviously not that segment, but sometimes not that night. Like, I'm not supposed to wrestle tonight, so I'm here to do my thing. I'm at work. I'm going to wear my street clothes. I don't, why would I dress in my full ring attire when I'm not going to wrestle? What you saw last night, sometimes, I guess this applies to certain people and not others. Sheamus got interviewed by two guys in a suit. He was wearing his, you know, his Brad Pitt from Snatch cosplay. He had to wrestle later. So he went backstage and he got changed. The two guys in suits, Miz and Morrison, they went backstage later and they got changed. It used to be that you had to do everything in your gear. And Randy Orton is so old school that he said, fuck that, to all of this noise. No, you whippersnappers, you crazy kids wearing regular clothes. Nah, not me, not the Viper. The Viper only has two settings, nude and dressed to wrestle. That's it. He rolls out of bed, stark naked, takes a shower, and puts on his fucking gear. That's it. That's all he has. That's the only option I am forced to understand. Everyone talks about how Randy hates pants. Like, Randy never wears pants. He refuses to wear pants. And like, his aversion to pants last night reached its apex. Like, the apex predator, they call him. The zenith of his non-pants wearing happened last night when he came out for his stupid little bliss, moment of bliss segment. He was wearing a hoodie over nothing. He wasn't wearing a shirt underneath it. He was just wearing a hoodie, but he was also wearing his, I'm assuming he was wearing his ring tights, like his trunks. I'm assuming his like Speedo trunk stuff, but I don't know, because he was also wearing like really baggy basketball shorts that went down like just below the knee. and a pair of wrestling boots that go up to mid-calf. So he was strutting, or he was standing in the ring wearing a hooded sweatshirt and basketball shorts, which wouldn't be bad. Like, maybe he just came from the gym. Fine. But he's also wearing wrestling boots, not sneakers, not trainers, as they say across the pond. He was wearing wrestling boots, mid-calf height wrestling boots, which means you saw about an inch and a half of delectable viper calf just sitting there hanging out. It was a weird fucking look. Like, you, if he had, I would not have said a damn word if he had been out there wearing, honestly, if he'd been out there wearing his trunks and not the basketball shorts. That's just what Randy Orton wears. Like, he just wears that to the ring. He wears a hoodie and basketball in his wrestling trunks and his wrestling boots. That's what he wears. That's what he normally wears. If he had been wearing, sweats, like, what do you call them? Tracksuit pants. You know, the little things with the zipper at the bottom that goes up at the ankle, you know, something like that. I would not have batted an eye. But it was that inch and a half of Randy Orton shin bone that didn't make a whole lot of sense. It was very obvious. It was very weird. It's not a look that I would recommend to anyone, even Randy Orton. That was the thing that caught my attention the most out of this segment. The segment was almost utterly inexplicable. I mean, Alexa Bliss, again, is having a blast, and that means something. But there's a lot of backlash to the whole thing of, like, why is she pretending to be five? And, I mean, she's a horror movie creepy girl. Like, that's the thing that she's playing. She's, like, it's weird. I mean, she's playing one of the puppets, like, come to life, is what it feels like to me. Obviously she's not, she's Alexa Bliss, but you know what I mean? Like, that's the whole aesthetic is this, she's playing a doll that is alive, like Pinocchio, to bring it back to the weird analogy I decided to make about water and lemonade and Disney elephants. She's playing a living doll. I think she's doing it well. I mean, she makes little jokes. Like, somebody's in a foul mood about Randy. Randy's never in a good mood, people. Well, he was the champion a while back. He was not in a good mood. He's never in a good mood. And she says, well, I wouldn't be in a phenomenal mood either if this happened to me last week. Cut to the video. And, we see what happened to Bray Wyatt, costing him the thing. I don't know why the Fiend would do that. I haven't really met the Fiend. I've known Bray Wyatt for years. I don't know why would that happen. He's my best friend. The Fiend is my best friend, says Bliss. So they're both. He said basically said, we're both crazy. We're both. Psychotic. But the Fiend wears his dementia on his sleeve where everyone can see it. Not dementia. What am I saying? Derangement. Dementia is what Vince has, of the steroid variety. I mention that from time to time on this show. Derangement is what the thing that makes him psychotic. Is Orton hides his away so people can't see it. Easier to blend into society that way. Well, you're not going to blend in anywhere wearing those wrestling boots and those basketball shorts there, Randall. Well, let me tell you, people are going to be staring at your inch and a half of calf. So I found out that I found Wyatt's Bray Wyatt's weakness and vulnerability years ago when I burned down the his childhood home, a shack out in the woods. But now I got to find the Fiend's weakness. I think I have. and Blizz like steps to Orton, and you don't realize like how teeny eeny weeny Alexa Bliss is. Like, she's definitely wearing flats with no lifts, you know, in them. But she comes up to Randy's belly button, which means I need to have a scene that happens between her and AJ Styles' very large individual bodyguard. Because I think she might come up to his kneecaps. Like, he is so much taller than, like, Sheamus. And Sheamus is Randy Orton size. So Alexa must. I don't want to speculate on exactly what part of his anatomy she would come up to eye level with. I don't want to speculate. Because that would be bad. But so if the voices are telling you that I'm the weakness, are they telling you the truth, or are they telling you lies? One of us tells the truth, and one of us always lies. I tell the truth. No, he doesn't. I do. That was from Labyrinth. It's a great movie. This has become movie chat with Alex. Coming soon to Fable Select. No. So she says, so who was manipulating who, blah, blah, blah. So the lights go down, and the lights start to come out, and so the arena's all black now. The red lights come up. And Orton is carrying Alexa Bliss in his arms, like he's about to cross the threshold with his new bride. You know, that kind of thing. And the Fiend is there in the ring, and he just holds his arms out to try and please give her to me. I need her. So Orton quickly hands, she's like, just gives Alexa to the Fiend, and then rolls out, and then says, "Who's laughing now?" And honestly, Randall, I don't know. Is it you? What are you laughing about? Is it because of how tiny Bliss is? She is super tiny. Alexa is super tiny. Is that what you're laughing about? I don't know what you're laughing about, Randy. Or is it you? It's not the Fiend. The implication that you're saying when you say who's laughing now is that it's not the Fiend. Is it not the Fiend? Because the Fiend usually laughs. Oh, now I get it. You're saying the Fiend usually laughs. His whole shtick is laughing. Yeah, right? Yeah, that's his little creepy laugh. But you're saying it's not the Fiend who's laughing now. Is it? The implication is that it's you, Randy, but I don't understand what you'd be laughing at, Randy. Are you saying because the Fiend seems to care for Alexa Bliss in much way, the same way, again, it's movie night with Alex, in much the same way that King Kong cares for the blonde lady that he carries around, climbs the Empire State Building with? Is that what we're saying? So you've figured out that is this like a Spider-Man, again, movie night with Alex, is this like a Spider-Man reference where like the Spider-Man, it happens in Batman too, but mostly it's a Spider-Man thing. Like Spider-Man can never reveal his identity because he's too worried about the people closest to him being hurt. You know, that's the whole point, is that the villains, if the Sinister Six or whatever, people who were involved, people who hate Spider-Man, if they were to find out that he was Peter Parker and that he has an elderly aunt and, I don't know, three or four girlfriends, like pseudo-girlfriends, that he would, they would be vulnerable to attack from the villains. Is this the idea we're trying to come to? Because it's very convoluted, your point here, Randy, about the who's laughing and why. Because I guess that's what you're trying to say, is that now you know the Fiend cares for Alexa Bliss. So you're going to kidnap and torture Alexa Bliss to get to the Fiend? I mean, I'm spitballing here. I'm trying to fill in the gaps that you've left, Randy, because we have no fucking idea what you're talking about. I honestly don't know what the fuck you go with this. So you're going to hurt her to get to him, and then what? Is your plan to make the fiend extra angry and murdery? Because then you'll be able to catch him napping with that RKO out of nowhere. This feud doesn't make any fucking sense. It could, if you guys had just listened to my fucking pitch for the fiend from the get-go. I've said it a bunch of times. I think by now we could have found out. But at the beginning, Bray Wyatt should have insisted that he was not the fiend and the fiend was not him. And then when Bray Wyatt would have a match, all of a sudden the fiend would come out to wrestle the really important ones. And it was like this thing that he could conjure up out of his brain, an alternate personality. Like there was a schism in his psyche, and it fractured, and one half of him was this demon clown, and the other half of him was like super happy Mr. Rogers guy. But he would never ever admit that he was also the fiend. When they started referring to him as the fiend Bray Wyatt, then well, now it's just a fucking thing that he does. It's a Joker mask he puts on, and that's it. So it's not nearly as interesting. Because Of course, Bray Wyatt cares for Alexa Bliss. They like hang out in the funhouse all the time now. They're best buddies. He taught her how to do this funny thing with her eyes. It was crazy. Have you seen that? And that's it. The other thing during this thing that I didn't like is Byron Saxton refers to Alexa Bliss, a woman who is, I believe, north of 30, definitely way too old for Buddy Murphy, and that's why he dumped her. But she's north of 30. He refers to her as a very confused young woman, which is like what you would say about somebody who was, I don't know, let's say 19 and infatuated with a much older man, who would say she was a confused young woman. It's a belittling way of referring to somebody who might have issues, and a way that you, Byron Saxton, say that because she's young and a woman, she therefore isn't in control of what she thinks and believes, which is fucking bullshit. And we don't need that kind of. You don't need to insert that as part of this. She's a very confused young woman. Well, she's an adult. She can make her own fucking decisions. This is not like my 14-year-old went and got a tattoo and lied about her age to the artist or whatever. Like, this is not that. It's weird. I don't love that things like that bug me, but they do. Just don't do them. Okay. It's a symphony of destruction match. Did you know Elias has experience in these? Yes. He's been in one before and lost. So he's got a lot of experience. This is a match that plays right into Elias's strengths. He's good at playing guitar and singing. Does he also know how to use musical instruments as lethal weapons? Is that part of the training he got at music school? Because I was in high school band. I know, not high school, middle school band. Let's be honest, middle school band. Because I wanted to play the drums. And so I was like, I'll join band because then you get to play the drums. Well, you start out band in sixth grade and they make you play the fucking xylophone. And then if you get through sixth grade playing the xylophone, in seventh grade you can graduate to like playing the cymbals or the timpani. I was the timpani guy. I called dibs on timpani every fucking time. And by eighth grade you got to play the drum set. And it was like really shitty like jazz drums. You know, we can't fucking play drums. So at the end of eighth grade, I said I don't want to play band anymore, but because I want to play drums, and they're not letting me play a drum. So my dad is an eighth grade birthday present got me a drum set, and I played in like three different like cover bands in high school. Again, a new fact that you learned about me. But I never decided, hey, you know what I want to do? Now that I've mastered playing drums, mastered is being very kind. Now that I've mastered playing drums, I want to hit people over the head with them? No. This is a hardcore match where the weapons are different. That's all it is. It's a weird... Why? You don't have to play an instrument well in order to allow, for the ref to be like, okay, no, you played the scales on that saxophone, so now you're allowed to use it as a weapon. Now that would be interesting. As it is, this was not. I've said many times before that until they figure out what the fuck they're doing with this, until they make Elias realize, no, it wasn't Jeff Hardy. In fact, it was another guy on the same show who's now a babyface, I think. Weird. The big deal with this is that at one point, Elias takes the neck of a wooden acoustic guitar and jams it. Piece of wood. He takes a stick and jams it into an amplifier, a speaker of some kind, and he electrocutes himself, which I think should be that's when you throw up the X. I mean, if a guy electrocutes himself, that's it. Thank you, everybody. But this match is now over. I mean, he was doing the thing where he shakes, like, if what we're saying is that he electrocuted himself, I think we should also say that's it, Jeff, you win. Good night, everybody. But I also don't think that's how electricity works. If it was metal, if he jammed a mic stand in it, I would be like, cool, fair game. But I don't think wood conducts electricity. I mean, it lights on fire. If a lightning strikes a tree, it lights on fire, but I don't think it conducts electricity. Am I not remembering my high school science correct? The big spot though is Elias lost the previous Symphony of Destruction match because he was hit over the back by a stand-up bass. Braun Strowman hit him over the back with a stand-up bass and also dropped a piano on his head. Because that's what you do. And this is the same thing. He gets hit with I believe it's a cello, because it looks a little smaller than a bass. But he gets hit with a stand-up bass type thing by Jeff Hardy. And Tom Phillips says, "Oh, the unforgiving bassoon!" Which from my days in middle school band, I can tell you, in the wrong hands, the bassoon can be very unforgiving. I popped myself with that one, but it's not a bassoon. Tom, the bassoon is a wind instrument. It is not, that is not what a bassoon is. And to Samoa Joe's credit, he's like, that ain't a bassoon. That's a bass, Tom. And Tom's like, ah, well, you know, I don't know. I'm stupid. That was funny. But the big spot, of course, is when Jeff Hardy puts Elias on a table on the floor right in front of the ring steps. In the corner, you know what I mean? Between the corner of the barricade and the ring steps is a table. And Jeff Hardy climbs to the top rope, and he does a swanton, but he usually gets a lot more distance with a swanton, so he's able to complete the somersault and full extension of all four limbs. But he can't do that in this case. He has to cut it short, otherwise the backs of his legs are going to smash on the barricade, and that won't feel good. So he also contracts into a fetal position. He's doing like a somersault senton, but he also doesn't get very far because he does land hard on Elias with his back, but he lands almost as hard with his fucking cranium on the steel steps apparently he's fine, but Jeff Hardy, dude. So he wins the match versus Elias. And here's where I should mention, last week on Main Event, there was one wrestling match on Main Event last week. Care to guess what it was? No, close. No, it was Jeff Hardy versus Ricochet. Yeah. On Main Event. I know, isn't that weird? Considering that's like a pseudo dream match for some people. I mean, without Jeff Hardy, like basically the first real daredevil high flyer. Like, I know he didn't have like the suite of crazy athletic moves that like Ricochet has now, but nobody did at the time. At the time, he was the fucking high flyer. I mean, it's him and fucking Billy Kidman, you know? Like, Mysterio was different. Luchadors were different. Like, this was a different kind of thing. And I think without Jeff Hardy, there would be no Ricochet. Ricochet wouldn't have been like, that's awesome. Let me do that shit. And then figured out how to make a career out of it. The daredevil that started it all versus a man who would not be this guy without that original daredevil, a man who could truly fly. It's a dream match for some, and something like certainly a first time thing on Main Event. And not only that, but Elias was seated at the top of the ramp playing a song through the whole fucking match. They wrestled the whole match with Elias singing a song. And no, I am not making that up. Ricochet won with a backslide, in case you're wondering, because they had to keep Jeff Hardy protected, I guess. Spoiler alert for this week's episode of Main Event. Remember how they were trying to get over Angel Garza with those roses to the camera thing? Did they do that this week? I might have fast-forwarded past it. Because those things are short. And they kind of look like commercials. So he defeated Humberto Carrillo. Remember that guy? Wow, blast from past that guy, Humberto Carrillo. Angel Gavardo defeated Humberto Carrillo. Also, Nikki Cross, she lost last week to Alexa Bliss. I kind of put a little coda, a little finish on that storyline. Yeah, she's losing now. Just losing. Just a loser now. Just a loser. She lost to Peyton Royce, who has, at this point, capitalized on pinning Bayley, the longest ever running SmackDown Women's Champion at Survivor Series. She has capitalized that on that in the intervening 2 weeks following by winning a match versus Nikki Cross on Main Event. So that is how much thought they give to what they fucking do at Survivor Series. They could have had any person on Raw pin Bayley if Bayley had to go out and that. They could pick anybody and then build on that. They could have picked anybody. Shayna, Nia, anybody. Probably not Lana. That was the whole point, right? But they picked Peyton. And what have they done to capitalize on that? Fucking nothing. So it really is. It's all fucking arbitrary and up to the whims of a 75-year-old madman with steroid dementia. So there was another segment on Main Event, not the one that was filmed last night, but the one from last week. There was another segment which we'll talk about. We'll talk about that now. Well, now-ish. Jeff Hardy plays a tambourine afterwards. Just so we know. Apparently, people liked the fact that he played a tambourine. Whatever. So, here's the first time I'll say this. What the fuck is a sudden death triple threat match? What the fuck is this a sudden death triple threat match? What the fuck is a sudden death triple threat match? As opposed to what exactly? What other kinds of triple threat matches are there? I am not accustomed to an elimination style triple threat match where you start the match with three individuals and the first one to be pinned leaves. And the second one to be pinned loses, and then the first one is the winner. The one that's left. Last man standing. Every triple threat match that I have ever seen has been a sudden death triple threat match. This is just like Vince wanting to throw in a fucking buzzword and then being like, okay, Grandpa, whatever you say. Yeah, yeah, we know. Yep, thousands, hundreds, millions of illegal votes. Yep, sure, Grandpa, whatever you say. That's that. That's your grandpa saying something really crazy and or racist at Thanksgiving, and you're like, okay, sure, Grandpa, whatever, okay. No, it's cool. No, okay, no, you keep watching that Lions game. Go Lions. That's what this is, except for that guy, your grandpa, is just as crazy and or racist, but also is in control of the whole fucking company. So you just have to go with it. Let's call it a sudden death triple threat match. And you know, two people in that room are looking at each other going like, isn't every fucking triple threat match a sudden death match? And they go, yeah, well, let's just fucking call it that because that's what he wants it to be called. Okay, fine, cool. Yeah, Vince, good idea. That's great. It totally will add something to the match by calling it a sudden death triple threat match instead of just a triple threat match. Whatever. There's a through line in this evening. Matt Riddle talking to people backstage is the I should add alleged and probable rapist Matt Riddle talking to people backstage. And this is hit or miss. It's 20% hit and 80% miss. But I understand where they're going with it. And if I didn't feel oogie every time I see him on screen, I might actually have enjoyed part of this. Alas. I don't enjoy it. He's talking to Keith Lee, and he just keeps on talking and talking and talking about this triple threat match and whether or not, you know, if he were to win and he'd have to a match versus Drew McIntyre, bro. And I know you've already faced him, bro, but I haven't yet, bro. And I would really talk, blah, blah, blah. He says, I want to see if Drew McIntyre can do that Austin Powers thing. I'm dead sexy. Which I don't know is. That's Austin. That's Fat Bastard from. I mean, it's from the same movie. I'll allow it, rapist. I'll allow it, probable alleged rapist. I'll allow it. But it's not. You're getting your Austin Powers characters mixed up. Anyway, Keith Lee by that point has walked away, and there's no way that Riddle wouldn't have seen him walk away. That's not possible. Riddle totally saw him walk away. But the camera had pushed in on Riddle, who is looking in the same direction the whole time he's given the promo. And then at Keith Lee, who was there a second ago, and the camera zooms in on Riddle and then zooms back out again, and Keith Lee's gone. But Matt Riddle's got to go, where'd you go? I see how it is, bro. That's not good. Don't do that. That makes it look like Matt Riddle doesn't have object permanence. You know what I mean? Like, if you play peekaboo with a baby, it thinks when it closes its eyes, you've disappeared. Is that what you're saying about Matt Riddle? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. That guy seems like he smoked a lot of pot, like a lot. So maybe it's possible. So here's the deal. The other segment from last week on Main Event was a Miz TV segment, which I don't think they normally do talk show segments for Main Event, for WWE Main Event, the most ironically named show in the WWE lexicon. But the Miz TV segment featured Ali and the rest of Retribution. And during said segment, all of the members of Retribution got to get on the mic. This would be the first time ever for Mace and Slapjack to speak, I believe, on WWE programming. And they all got to speak and give their reasons why they joined Mustafa Ali to form Retribution. This is a vital piece of character development that we need to understand why Retribution is a thing that exists beyond just Ali's assurances and espousements of his reasons. It's very good to hear specifics why each person is involved. Not only was it on Main Event and not on Raw, where people would actually, you know, see it, but it was ruined by R-Truth running in, 24/7 champion R-Truth running in and being chased by the gobbledygooker. And again, I am not making that up. The segment basically ends because R-Truth ran in being chased by a man in a turkey suit. I should probably mention, during the Symphony of Destruction match, Elias found R-Truth hiding in a piano, in a grand piano, and Drew Gulak and Akira Tozawa and some luchadors, they all ran down to try and win that stupid fucking title from R-Truth, which, again, they've never, ever mentioned. Like, do you get paid by the second that you're holding it? You get paid like $1 per minute that you're the champion. I mean, for some people like Lince Dorado, I think it would be a pay bump. You know what I mean? Like, they have still have never told us why they want this title, but for their troubles, they get hit with various musical instruments. I only bring up the Retribution thing because they're on TV on Raw again this week, and it would be really cool if they had been on Raw last week talking about their motivations, because then the stuff that happens this week might make sense. So the good news, I guess, the good news for Retribution, I suppose, not for Ricochet, is that it's Slapjack versus Ricochet one-on-one, and Ricochet loses via distraction. Like, at first, it's just Mustafa Ali and Slapjack who were out there. And, you know, Slapjack tries to ground him or whatever. But eventually, when Ricochet gets the upper hand, Mace and T-Bar come out and get kicked off the apron by Ricochet. And then Ali is on the other apron and Ricochet runs at him, and Ali hops down and turns around and wasn't turn around. Actually, Slapjack has a hell of a finisher, like a really cool finisher. It looks really nasty. It's like a twisting snap back suplex. Like, he picks up the dude, cradles one leg. He picks up a guy's one leg from behind, gets his head underneath the thing, and then just rotates his body super fast. It's like a reverse Sister Abigail type of a thing. It's really cool looking. And Slapjack wins with it. He hits it on Ricochet, and Ricochet, who has not been actually hit by either Mace or T-Bar or Mustafa Ali, if I remember correctly, he just takes one thing from Slapjack, and he's out for the count, which does a great job of building this thing as a finisher, and yet it's Slapjack. So I wonder how many times he'll actually get to use that thing. Probably not very many. It's too bad because it looked great. So as I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's awesome. Like, I would not have thought Slapjack would get his first singles win before either Mace or T-Bar got his first singles win. That's cool. Maybe they're going to do something great with Retribution. I mean, they're letting them win matches. That's a huge start. Then I forgot that during the match, Dana Brooke showed up. And she slapped Mustafa Ali in the face. And then she says to him, as the whitest girl in Ohio, she says, "Where your girl at? Where your girl at? Tell her what's up. Tell her what's up." That's right. "Where your girl at? Tell her what's up." Like, Dana, honey. Dana. Honey, no. Anyway, so there's a match made for later between Mia Yim. Oops, I'm sorry. Reckoning. I'm always going to mess that one up. and Dana Brooke, because, you know, Reckoning. Gosh, what's wrong with me today? I just can't seem to figure out why I want to call Reckoning Mia Yim. That's weird. Why would I do that? Huh. Anyway, Reckoning beat up Dana Brooke a while ago, before Survivor Series. So Dana couldn't compete at Survivor Series. It was very mean of Reckoning to do that. So we already got Moment of Bliss. And now we're like an hour into the show, and now we're going to get Miz TV. And it's Miz TV with special guest Sheamus in his Brad Pitt from Shaft cosplay. And this is mostly just Miz and Morrison using varying degrees of bad comedy to try and get Sheamus to admit that he's going to turn on Drew any minute. And there's one point that's really good, and that's when Miz gets serious, because Sheamus is basically, you guys, here's what we're gonna do. Miz says to Sheamus, why not use all of that aggression you've got pent up, jealousy toward your friend Drew McIntyre, to turn on him tonight and beat him up and leave him for dead in the middle of the ring. And that way I will cash in on him. I'll become the champion and you can have, I think he basically says this, if he doesn't actually come out and say it, he implies, and you can have the first title match. How about that? And Sheamus says, "You guys got jokes, huh? Oh, you guys got jokes there, fella." And Miz says, "You know who's the joke here? You're the joke. You haven't sniffed the WWE title in what, 5 years? You held it for 2 months?" So you're the joke. How does it feel now to know your best buddy Drew is at the top and you're sinking to rock bottom? So Sheamus gets up and stares down Miz, and Sheamus takes off his little hat and his big furry jacket. And this is the difference between it's the difference between us. That's the difference between us, Miz. You like to run your mouth. I like to use my hands." And then he punches him in the mouth, and he beats up Morrison a little bit. And then Miz gets back up,
And then it's, oh, the damn numbers game. And they beat up Sheamus and hit him with a briefcase. Oh, those dastardly heels.
So, if you recall, Lana is the star of the women's division now. Every major storyline in the Raw women's division revolves around Lana, just as God intended. And for all of us agnostics out there, we just got to deal with it. So Asuka is yelling things in Japanese, encouraging type stuff to Lana before their match. They have another match versus Shayna and Nia. And Lana's like, yeah, okay. She's smiling and nodding. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. And so blonde, not Charlie Caruso, comes up and says, hey, so what, it looks like you and Asuka were going over some kind of game plan. Would you want to fill us in? It's like, oh no, I don't want to say blah, blah, blah. Something like, I don't want anybody to know something. She's implying that she was understanding Japanese, which is news to me. If that's a thing they're going to do with her, fine, but I don't buy it. Anyway, so she says, blah, blah, blah. Nia and Shayna are going to figure it out soon or something. Whatever. So then after the break, blonde, not Charlie Caruso, asked Nia and Shayna about it. Nia says it was a fluke. Baszler says, I don't know what you're talking about. I was doing my part. And I don't know what the hell you were doing. Not putting Lana through a table, that's for sure. So they go back at it a few times, and then Baszler's like, this is what we've been at each other's throats for a week. This is not fair. Listen, it was a mistake, it was a fluke, whatever. Losing to Asuka, an athlete like that, I will accept. But losing to Lana, no, can't happen. So it happens. Lana is terrible. I went into detail about it last week. She doesn't look like she wants to be out there. You can do, I'm bad at wrestling, but I'm still a professional wrestler. That can be something you can portray as a performer, as an actor. Lana has been in movies. So I'm assuming she had some kind of acting coach on those movies, because if not, God help us all. So wouldn't somebody have said, like, okay, this is the thing you're trying to play. You're trying to play this. Make yourself feel what that would be like and do it. You know, at least try to. A human being in this position, how would they act? How would they move? How would they walk? How would they carry themselves? What would they do? It just looks like Nia's bad enough in this fucking match. She was bad in a couple spots. She is definitely not good. As we talked about last week, she has the opposite problem of Lana. She exudes too much confidence where she should have less. And Lana, I believe, is not exuding anything. I believe she has no confidence. But if she does, she needs to show some of it. Because I don't understand. I mean, if you hated your job and were that bad at it, why wouldn't you quit and go do something else? Especially if you're Lana. Like, just quit and become an Instagram model and sell your fucking things you do on your Instagram page, whatever the hell those things were. If you hate doing this so much, because it looks like you hate doing it. It looks like you know you're bad at it and you don't want to do it anymore. So don't. And save us all the trouble. Please. I thought the finish was at least clever. Lana is in the Kira Fuda clutch.
And Baszler's really cranking back on it, and Lana's going to pass out any second. Lana runs in and breaks it up, which I guess you can do if somebody's in a submission. It very rarely happens in a submission. It happens in pinfalls being broken up all the time. But you very rarely see it happen during a submission move. Anyway, I just noticed that because it was an odd thing. When I saw it happen, I was like, isn't that a disqualification? But I guess it's not. It's perfectly legal to... Asuka runs in and hits Shayna with a Shining Wizard that basically just knocks Shayna silly. Shayna didn't see it coming. She had no idea it was there. She couldn't defend herself. She got kneed in the temple super hard, and she fell asleep. So Lana is basically already on top of Shayna, and so she, almost asleep, rolls over and gets the pin, and that's how they win. Nia's furious, and Shayna's furious, and say hello to your next women's tag champs, Asuka and Lana. I hate that is the case, but it sure appears that it is the case. The women's tag titles are floating. They are. They're supposed to be defended on all three brands. I don't know. When was the last time they were defended on NXT? Was that Sasha and Bayley doing it versus Tegan Nox and Shotzi Blackheart? Was that the last time they did that? It feels like Tegan Nox got injured 3 months ago. That's how long ago that fucking tag match. Well, they haven't been to NXT since. On SmackDown, like, they don't go to SmackDown ever. On Raw, there really isn't another option except for an option that includes Lacey Evans, so please, God, no. Jesus. It doesn't seem to make any sense other than this. I feel like Asuka is going to remain women's champion while becoming tag champion. And the thing that I had a problem with before was the women's tag champs were Bayley and Sasha, and they were both involved in matches, singles matches, with the women's champion, Asuka. A Raw Women's Champion, Asuka. And it was just that was it. Though the only women that mattered were the tag champs and the Raw Women's Champ, because the SmackDown Women's Champ was one of the tag champs. And they were all having matches together for weeks at a time, and every other woman in both divisions was left by the wayside, couldn't matter less. Somehow you have went from three women being the only important women on the shows. Now on Raw, you have just three women are involved. You keep the tag titles far away from SmackDown. Don't muddy the waters over there. Let's not do that. And then you add to the mix Lana, who is just fucking awful. Lana continues to fail upwards, and it's not fun to watch. This is not for me. So Drew McIntyre talks to Sheamus backstage. Sheamus is pissed about what happened on Miz TV. Hey, why didn't you? Well, you could have come out and helped me. Oh, well, you know, if the roles were reversed, I would have done the same. Periwinkle Blue. So. Anyway, Drew and Sheamus talk about, you know, let's go knock the heads off of those two Muppets. So the New Day come out and they're going to gloat via video package about beating the Hurt Business 2 out of 3 times. This is what happened. Like, the first... I don't know. Anyway, he talks first about how he's going to be on the gaming channel G4. It's a dream of his and blah blah blah. They go on and on and on and make fun of the Hurt Business a lot, and they keep just just name-checking the Hurt Business over and over and over again, over and over and over again. And then Xavier Woods is really surprised and angry that the Hurt Business music hits and the Hurt Business comes out. Like, we just had this thing on NXT with Kevin Owens in NXT as a commentator for one night. He got to host the KO show. And he was telling Leon Ruff, the newcomer who's the champion there, whatever you do, don't mention anybody in your promo, because that's going to mean they're definitely going to come out and start a fight. So the thing I said on the review of the Wednesday Night Wars podcast last week, which there's going to be another one tomorrow night. It's on the free site. You should totally watch it. Is now that Kevin Owens has pointed out all these foibles, all these tropes, has pointed out the rules of them, you have to point that out every time now. Or now we know what to look for. And if you do that again, we're going to know it's a fucking cliche. So when the Hurt Business, when their music hits and Xavier Woods gets really upset that they're interrupting his promo, like he didn't know they were definitely coming out, because Xavier Woods has been doing this a long time. He knows what the rules are. I would have loved it if Xavier Woods is in like, well, I suppose I should be expecting this. I did call them out by name. Silly me. Something like that. Anyway, this is mostly about Cedric Alexander wanting revenge on specifically Xavier Woods. Still say the Hurt Business should have won that match and become champions last week. You could do the same basic ideas now, where New Day coming down and demanding a rematch and the Hurt Business playing coy and whatever. You could push that off to TLC, but I really do believe you had a perfect setup to do the title change last week and you didn't do it, and yet the feud continues. It shouldn't, but it does. But it continues in an interesting way, because it's not another tag match, thank God. It is Cedric versus Xavier Woods, and Xavier Woods is in control the entire match. Cedric has to do one snap brain buster, or as Michael Cole would call it, a snap back of the neck buster. And there's a point where Cedric does come back far enough that he knocks Xavier out of the ring, and he goes to do a tope suicida. But Woods like reverses, like just kind of catches him and directs him into the barricade. Anyway, they both get back in the ring, both tired, but Cedric catches Xavier Woods with the lumbar check. And that's it. 1, 2, 3. So that's a clean fucking win. Shelton was out there with MVP. They did not get involved at all. So that's a clean victory. A singles victory. Cedric Alexander over Xavier Woods. That's great. That's very good. Also interesting is that Cedric celebrates by himself, gets out of the ring and is like yelling to himself, getting himself really pumped up and amped over this victory over Xavier Woods, walking up the ramp by himself as MVP and Shelton are in the ring going, congratulations, I guess. Were we going to do the thing where we all stand together in solidarity? I guess not. So it seems to be they're doing some kind of maybe Cedric breaking away from the Hurt Business and going his own way again thing, although it seems like he just got there. So I don't know if this is good or bad. It's just interesting. And I'll settle for interesting if it doesn't also seem like it's going to be fucking stupid. So Riddle comes up to AJ and Omos. And Riddle makes a joke about something, a carrot, or whatever, Skipper. And Omos laughs. almost, of course, is the very large individual bodyguard, very, very enormous person, very, very big man thing. And he laughs because I guess he knows that Riddle has a pet rabbit named Skipper. And AJ's, why do you know that? And I don't know why he knows that. Anyway, Riddle says that you remind me of my pet rabbit because you got great vertical leap, great hops. I do like that there was, again, if he wasn't an alleged rapist, I would really have enjoyed this segment for what it was. He says, that's a stupid name for a rabbit, says AJ Styles. You shouldn't call him Skipper. Rabbits don't skip, they hop. You should name him Hoppy. And Riddle, without missing a beat, says, well, I can't name him Hoppy. Hoppy's what I name my turtle. And it's just the way that he does it. It's perfect cadence. It's an actually weirdly dumb, funny line. He's basically turning him into fucking stoner guy. Which, I mean, if the flip-flop fits... Anyway, AJ is pissed off that Riddle says he reminds him of a rabbit. Sudden Death Triple Threat, aka a regular triple threat, is fun. These are three interesting guys to have in the ring together. There's an amazing moment where Lee gets Riddle up, I think, for the spirit bomb, but Riddle's able to maneuver it to like drop down into kind of like a weird arm bar thing that Lee will not go down. AJ gets back in the ring and Riddle is like draped over Lee's left arm, and Lee like uses Riddle as like a shield bash thing to like smash AJ in the face with Riddle's body. It's really, really impressive. Matt Riddle gets pinned by a phenomenal forearm because he and Lee are doing things too much, and AJ takes advantage. It's a good match. AJ has won, and he... So there's that. AJ versus Drew McIntyre TLC. I guess, from what I understand, Braun Strowman is injured, though I don't recall the exact nature of the injury. And so he was supposed to face McIntyre at TLC, but will no longer be doing so because of said injury. So they're doing AJ Styles instead, and that's better. That's better than the Braun thing. We've seen Drew versus Braun. I mean, it was a while ago, but we've seen it. AJ versus Drew seems like a lot of fun. AJ's going to lose because they're not hot potatoing the title back off of Drew. Not now, not with the way they're presenting him. No, no chance. So that match is going to be a lot of fun to watch, and the outcome is not in doubt. I can see, I feel like I said a lot about a lot of different WWE matches right now. Charlie Caruso interviews The Miz and John Morrison. They're idiots, basically. Dana Brooke comes out first. Okay, here's the deal. Dana Brooke is pissed at Reckoning. His Reckoning attacked her, so they have a match. She attacked Mustafa Ali as in retribution for the attack from Reckoning. Okay, so we have this thing. Now, I heard about what happened before I saw the match, so I wanted to make sure I was watching it to see what happens. Very early in the match, I'm talking first 15 seconds of a very short match, Reckoning's mask falls off. falls off, just falls onto the canvas, and they discard it. And the announced team never brings it up. They don't bring it up that this has happened, that she's not wearing a mask anymore. Also, they don't bring it up that she's obviously Mia Yim, who has had multiple NXT title shots. And was like, it's, I don't know if we're supposed to be like surprised who's actually under the masks. They haven't mentioned who they are. So the fact that it's obviously Mia Yim, somebody who was in NXT for years, and again, has had multiple NXT women's title matches. It seems weird they wouldn't mention it. Which, the fact that they're not mentioning it is the only thing that makes me pause in saying that this was obviously intentional. It had to have been. Mia Yim's mask is not like the fellas' masks. Slapjack, Mace, T-Bar, all their masks go around the head and buckle in some way, at least with sturdy Velcro, in the back of the head. Many multiple straps connect to the back of the head. Those masks are not meant to be removed. Mia Yim's mask is like one of those masks you wear if you're smart when you go outside, in case you come in contact with other people during this global deadly pandemic. It is a mask that attaches to your face by looping behind the ears, and that's it. Of course that mask is coming off during a match. I mean, you can just fling your head back in any way, selling a punch, and that mask is coming off. That match, that they had to have known that mask was going to come off. Right? But if they did, and that was the plan all along, why wouldn't it be mentioned by the commentary team? Like, in a way that, like, means something. All of the people in Retribution are all wearing masks, except for Mustafa Ali, by his own design. I understand that. So now, her being unmasked is a thing. It has to be a thing. Right? I mean, is it just that they were too stupid to realize that a mask designed in such a way was definitely going to fall off during a wrestling match? That thing looked like a stiff breeze would blow it off her face. It's just looped behind the ears. That's going to fall off in a fucking wrestling match. To say nothing if, like, somebody actually grabbed it and wanted it to come off, like tried to pull on it, then it's definitely coming off. I'm saying, like, all you got to do is shake your head no slightly vigorously, and that thing's going to come loose and fall off. So if it wasn't intentional, then they were idiots for designing the mask that way. And if it was intentional, then they're idiots for not bringing it up as a plot point. Dana Brooke wins. See, like, Mustafa Ali tries to distract her, and she's slightly distracted, but not distracted enough. And then she rolls up, does a schoolgirl to reckoning. Mia Yim. And then, irony of irony, Retribution got 50-50 in the same fucking show. They're not allowed to take two steps forward. It's one step forward, one step back. They take a step forward and they take a step back. They're not allowed to actually progress toward anything. Reckoning's in-ring debut on Monday Night Raw. She lost in like 2.5 minutes to Dana fucking Brooke. But if it's a plot point that now she's going to be Mia Yim, she's not going to be Reckoning, particularly because Mustafa Ali gets in her face and says, "There is no failure in Retribution. She attacked me and you were defending my honor, and you failed. There is no failure in retribution, says Mustafa Ali. Homeboy, retribution was just failure. The only ingredient in a retribution souffle is failure. Look it up in the book. Under retribution souffle, ingredients, failure. How much? A hell of a lot. A hell of a lot of failure is the only ingredient in retribution. Up until the point where you won a fucking match versus Mustafa versus Ricochet. And then you guys won via whoopsie-daisy, beating the Survivor Series team before the Survivor Series team swept the SmackDown team. Ever since then, it's been basically just failure. Before that, it was all failure. So maybe him berating her leads her to be like, you know what? I don't need this thing. I'm out of here. Maybe they decided they don't want a female member of Retribution, that it muddies the waters too much, and Vince doesn't like intergender. He doesn't like co-ed factions. I mean, maybe that's true. I don't know. But that mask was coming off. There was no doubt about it. Weird. Doesn't make any fucking sense, man. Meanwhile, Reckoning was doing all these promos directly addressing Asuka. And that never, like, Asuka never mentioned her. They never had any interaction. I don't know. It's just bad. Miz and John Morrison, they approach AJ Styles and Omos. Hey, congratulations for earning the WWE title shot. They brought AJ, who is from Georgia, a peach pie, a very large peach pie. And hey, why don't you help Miz when I cash in my Money in the Bank briefcase? So AJ is like, yeah, sure, I'll help you. And Miz is like, you will? That's weird. Like, no. If you become champ, it'll be a hell of a lot easier to beat you than it will be to beat Drew McIntyre. And Morrison's like, yeah, that's true. Every now and then, Morrison has a little throwaway one-liner as his comedy bullshit actually works. AJ is like, ah, peach pie. They're about to leave. He's like, oh, no, wait, Morrison, leave the pie. And so he holds the pie up, and so it kind of almost obscures his entire face as he says, peach pie. And Omos, because Omos is very large, get it? Here's a joke. Okay, the setup is that Omos is very large. You ready for it? Here's the punchline. Omos says, that's not a pie, that's a cupcake. Is Omos under the impression that small pies are cupcakes? Like, you could say that's not a cake, that's a cupcake. A small pie would be, I guess, what, a tart? A little fruit tart. A little baked shell, some fruit compote. Lovely. But it is not a cupcake, sir. Very large individual, sir. Good day, enormous fellow. I said good day. Riddle's backstage, recovering. MVP walks up. So what happened out there? Yeah, losing sucks, but you know it doesn't suck? My stoner business ideas, dude. Bro. Mostly it's just like words that start with an O sound, but he changes the consonant. So we'll team up with Duncan, and instead of donuts, we'll have bro nuts. Matt Riddle, this is maybe insensitive of me to make this joke, but it seems to me your bro nuts are part of what got you into the legal problems you are currently in, sir. Anyway, MVP slaps Matt Riddle for probably for being an alleged rapist. And then Riddle tries to fight Lashley, MVP, but then Lashley comes up and puts Riddle in the Hurt Lock. So I guess my dreams of a Keith Lee versus Bobby Lashley U.S. title feud will have to wait, because first he's got to put the Stoner to sleep, which in my experience with Stoners should be quite easy to do. They fall asleep anywhere. It's a side effect of the drug. For some reason, Keith Lee walks up to Sheamus, and there's a little weird scene where Lee says, "Oh, it's none of my business, but some of the guys in the back think you might be turning on Drew tonight." And Sheamus says, "He's right. It's none of your business. I'm going to go turn on my partner now." So, Shirley Caruso interviews Drew McIntyre about his loss to Roman, and it's predictable. He's like, "You only beat me because your cousin got involved," which, you know, he beat you because you claymored him into a referee and then he took advantage of it with a low blow. The Jey Uso stuff was a little side effect, a bonus. But also, you were protected because you passed out in the guillotine, dude. We don't have to protect you by, like, no-selling the beating you took. And he could have – whatever. You didn't need to hit him with the low blow. You didn't need to hit him with the low blow and also the interference with Jey Uso if you were also going to have him pass out in the guillotine. Like, that's enough protection. You passed out. You never gave up. You got put in a guillotine. You never gave up. That's enough. You don't also need the excuses of the ref was down, he low-blowed me, and his cousin kicked me in the face. There's too many excuses. Just one thing protects you. You don't need all the other things. So now when you come out and be like, well, you beat me, but you didn't beat me fair and square. Okay, great. We're back to nothing. Because then he says, you thought it was going to be a pushover or something, but then you realized after kicked out of spear after spear after spear that you'd never been in the ring with a guy like me. Bitch, he was in the ring with you multiple times. And you weren't kicking out of spears then. It's because of who you are being protected now. It doesn't make any sense. Like you had a WrestleMania match with him. Nobody remembers it because it was fucking bad, but you had a Mania match with the guy. You trying to pass off your meeting at Survivor Series as being a first ever is just fucking lame. Anyway, Sheamus and McIntyre versus Miz and Morrison. Morrison is so fucking athletic. Like my wife happened to walk by through the living room as I was watching this match, and Morrison did something super athletic, and she was like, "Who's that guy?" And I was like, "He's one of the most athletic wrestlers in the world, but they have him doing comedy shit. Is he funny? Sometimes." Oh. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how my wife, who doesn't watch wrestling, who hates wrestling, really, reacts to the presentation of John Morrison. He does something amazing in the ring, and she goes, "Wow, who's that?" And I tell her that he's really great, but they treat him like shit. And she's like, "That's too bad." Yeah. This match has ended with Sheamus is taunting AJ to get in the ring. Like, come in and why don't you come in and fight us or something. And at some point, Morrison yanks Sheamus off the apron because Drew's gonna hit a claymore, but Sheamus wants to get tagged in so he can hit a brogue kick because he really hates Miz. So, but Morrison pulls Sheamus off the ring apron, throws him into the ring post and then over the barricade. So now we never see Sheamus again. He might be dead. I'm not sure. Maybe behind that barricade is like a moat full of rabid crocodiles. I don't know. But it's not a bottomless pit. And it would have to be a bottomless pit for us to never see Sheamus again. Unless he died. So that's why I'm going with moat full of man-eating rabid crocodiles. I don't know if crows can get rabies. Maybe they just injected them with rabies and to see what happens. But I'm going with rabid crocodiles in a moat who ate Sheamus. They already did Tozawa getting eaten by a shark and he came back fine. Maybe the shark just like shit him out. Whole. It's possible. So it's possible also that Sheamus was eaten by crocodiles, rabid crocodiles, last night, and he'll be back next week fine. But he had to have been eaten by something because the night goes on for 5 fucking more minutes and we never see Sheamus again. So Sheamus thrown off the barricade where he was eaten by crocodiles. Then AJ Styles hits a phenomenal forearm on McIntyre. And he's trying to convince Miz to cash in the briefcase. Meanwhile, Morrison and his Starship Pain off the little split-legged moonsault onto McIntyre. McIntyre, they hit hit him with a Miz does a skull-crushing finale on him as well. And they're going to cash in the briefcase. But wait a minute. Miz is like, why do you want me to cash in so much? This is my briefcase, because AJ's about to hand the briefcase to the referee. And Miz is like, that's mine. I do that. I'm the one who does that. So while they're arguing about this, just as they hand the briefcase to the ref, and the ref has to like check with them 3 times. You know, like, I don't know, when if you're doing something like I'm gonna sign up for this service online, and they gotta make sure you're not a robot, so you gotta click all the pictures that have school buses in them. I feel like that's what the ref must be doing. Hey Miz, are you a robot? Prove it. Click on all these pictures. Only the ones with stop signs. Okay, I guess you're not a robot. All right, now click here and click here one more time. Now check this box and click here again. Okay, fine. We're cashing the briefcase. That's how long it takes for them to cash in the fucking briefcase. Just fucking do it. When the briefcase is actually cashed in, when that actually happens, you'll be amazed at how fast it happens. But only when they're trying to like create ideas that it might be cashed in, when they know for a fact they're not actually going to do it, that's when it takes them for fucking ever. Took them so long that McIntyre woke up from having 3 finishers done to him, hits Miz with a Claymore, shit cans Morrison out of the ring, and then backs down AJ. AJ does a backflip out of the ring onto the shoulder of Omos, and Kevin Dunn is so fucking incompetent, he misses the shot. AJ does a goddamn backflip out of the ring, over the ring ropes, under the shoulder of Omos, and fucking Kevin Dunn misses the goddamn shot. We are left with a very funny visual of Omos carrying AJ on his shoulders, AJ facing the same way Omos is facing, but Omos is carrying him on his shoulder. And AJ saying, you're lucky this guy's holding me back. Otherwise, I'd kick your ass. Oh, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you at TLC. I'm going to get you. You're lucky this guy's stopping me from murdering you, because I would totally do it. And that's it. And that's Raw. So what happened during Raw that has lasting implications? Well, it's too early to say about the Mia Yim. Mia Yim stuff. We don't know if that's actually going to do anything because, again, we don't know if they were incompetent by making the mask wrong and thinking it was going to work, or incompetent by doing the major reveal but then not actually making it part of a storyline. Uh, Lana and Asuka are probably going to become your new women's tag champs. Hooray. Won't that be fun? There's the Cedric stuff. We know now probably Matt Riddle versus Bobby Lashley at TLC, probably. Who's laughing now? Is it Randy? If it is, I sure would like to know why. And AJ Styles is going to lose to Drew McIntyre at TLC. Matt Riddle's also probably going to lose to Bobby Lashley as well. I don't think Asuka has a program for the women's title. The Raw women's title probably doesn't get a match at TLC. I think that they're going to do Lana and Asuka versus Nia and Shayna for the women's tag titles at TLC. And Asuka doesn't have anybody to face for the women's title. The singles title on Raw doesn't get a program. So that was Raw. And we're limping toward TLC with some proposed and possible matches that will likely be good, but I don't think the outcome will be very much in doubt. Hooray. Is that the best we can hope for in WWE, where like the matches are good, but we knew it was going to happen? It feels like that's the best we can hope for. It's a low bar. It's a low bar to clear. We don't just set the low bar. We are the low bar. That was Sour Graps. I haven't done this in a while. Hey, it's the holidays. Shop.fifel.com. Get everybody on your Christmas list a Sour Graps shirt. And when they ask, what the hell is this? They say, there's this fat foul mouth guy who sits in his basement and yells profanely about bad WWE booking. He's got a podcast, and I like it, and I thought you would like this shirt. Like, write that in the card. I'm your host, Alex Pawlowski. Stay safe out there, brothers and sisters. Fightful Faithful, I love you. But everything sucks.